Hi, everyone. Welcome. Good evening, good night, or good morning. I'm Abdullah Samir, your host of the Friendly Ex-Muslim podcast. We are now on episode 101. So those of you who are new here, please do subscribe and like the video. To remind you, this podcast is also available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. So if you'd like to listen to this in the convenience of your own car or on the road, and you don't have YouTube Premium, well, just go and get the podcast. Just download Stitcher or iTunes or whatever app you want to use. It's either one is fine, and just look up Friendly Ex-Muslim. And if you listen to it on there, you can download it. You can go on the road. So it's just that much more convenient. Now that we have that out of the way, I want to introduce my special guest for today. My special guest today is Jonathan. Jonathan is an ex-Jehovah's Witness. I met Jonathan on TikTok. So Jonathan has a channel, an account on TikTok where he speaks about the Jehovah's Witnesses. And he talks about, you know, how he used to be part of it. And so on this channel, we don't only interview ex-Muslims, but we interview people of all different backgrounds. And that's what makes it interesting. When you hear stories from other former religious believers, sometimes you're just like, wow, like I had the same experience, even though it's a totally different, you know, coming from a totally different background, right? So John was born into and baptized at 15 in Jehovah's Witnesses. His last meeting was in 2012, so almost 9 years ago. And he's quite a vocal opponent of the Jehovah's Witness leadership for a couple of years now. So how's it going, Jonathan?
It's going well, thank you. And just want to say thank you for having me on. It's an honor.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So let's jump into your story. Like, tell me what it's like, you know, growing up as a Jehovah's Witness. Was your family religious? You know, were they kind of not really serious about it? How was that?
Okay, well, I was the oldest of three children. So I have two younger sisters, my mom and my father at the time. My father's passed away, but my mom was very devout in it. Whereas we were not so much. My sisters were never baptized, so they just sort of went their own way as far as religion is concerned. My father, when he met my mother, she was Catholic, and then someone came to the door and studied with her, and she became Jehovah's Witness, and he sort of followed suit, but it was more or less for her. So after a while, because he didn't really have it strong in his heart, he just sort of, you know, stayed home and watched Samurai Sunday, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so that's basically, you know, as far as everyone's stand was when I was younger.
So would you say that when you said your sisters weren't baptized, how does that work? Is it like an optional thing to be baptized, or is that something you have to choose for yourself as a teenager when you get to a certain age? How do you become baptized in the church?
Well, it's not a requirement, as in they can't make you do it. You know, it has to be a personal choice, but it is highly stressed. They will unofficially pressure you. There's usually peer pressure. With myself, I was baptized at 15. Others in the congregation were getting baptized, and I was kind of waiting. I wasn't quite there. And there was an elderly sister in the congregation who was a pioneer, which is a full-time minister. So that's what, you know, basically what they do. And she was always like, so when are you going to get baptized? And, you know, it was just sort of a pressure thing. She was subtly applying pressure and trying to get me to admit, like, maybe you should do that. So I thought about it. And, you know, it's something I came to do. And that's where I ended up, so.
When you were growing up as a Jehovah's Witness, did it affect your life? Like, did you have to go to religious school or just enter regular schools? Did you have, other than going to church on Sunday,
yeah,
was there any impact of being in this religion on you personally? Like, did it affect your any choices that your parents made, or like how you were raised, what type of friends you had, you know, stuff like that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So with a lot of religions, you might just have a Sunday meeting, you know, a church service or what have you. With Jehovah's Witnesses, especially at this time, they had three meetings per week. So you would have the wash shower study and a talk on Sunday. So, you know, they address the congregation. On during the week, you'd have theocratic ministry school. So it's not a school like, you know, an institution, but you could join that school and you could give presentations, a Bible reading or, you know, some sort of a Bible-based talk. And then on another day of the week, which for me was generally Tuesday, would be a Bible study. So it would be a more informal setting, usually in someone's home, small groups of, say, sorry, my phone tends to be very loud when it gets a message.
It's okay.
So it would be more informal. Now they had that arrangement for quite some time, and then they did away with it. I don't know. Times change, I guess. And now they just have it as two meetings. But so, yeah, it kept me busy that way. Plus, you're supposed to prepare for the meetings. So you've got to do the time involved with that. You're supposed to go out and preach, you know, from door to door. So generally it's going to be Saturday mornings, or maybe after that Sunday meeting, you might continue on into the field ministry and, you know, knock on doors or sometimes, you know, end up at the coffee shop.
That a requirement? Like everyone has to do a certain number of hours of preaching door to door?
It's an expectation of approximately 10 hours per month.
Okay.
Which doesn't seem like a lot, but it kind of is when you have everything else factored in. And that's just sort of a minimum. If you were to do less than that and you have some sort of a privilege in the congregation, for instance, I might be running the microphone to people for comments, or I might be adjusting the sound. Sorry, I'm getting really bad sunlight here. Adjusting the sound. And, you know, if you don't have enough hours, they're going to kind of go, and they might take that privilege away from you. You know, there's different things that you might be involved in, you know, the distribution of the literature, what have you. So,
yeah, like religions like this, they survive because of evangelicalism, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how they grow. That's how they continue to exist, because naturally people will, you know, leave the religion, especially nowadays. People are like always leaving religion behind. You left the religion behind. I left the religion behind. So without this constant like preaching, you know, we have to be going door to door.
Yeah.
Do you think the religion would, I mean, as it is, I don't know how many million people are Jehovah's Witness in the world. It's quite a small sect anyways, isn't it?
Last time I checked, there's approximately 8.5 million worldwide.
Okay.
With, probably a good chunk of that in the United States.
Oh yeah.
That's where it was founded. So that kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah. So continue with your story then. Like you were saying, you had this two or three times a week, you had to go for Bible study plus the meeting, plus you had to prepare for that. Eventually you got to the point where something happened, right? So do you want to talk about that yet? Or is it something else you'd like to add to your childhood as being a Jehovah's Witness? Like in my case, I wasn't raised as a religious Muslim, but I eventually chose on my own to become religious. And so it shaped everything in my life. It shaped the type of jobs I would take. I wouldn't listen to music. I wouldn't buy a house because mortgages are haram, forbidden in Islam.
Really?
And of course I married a Muslim woman because of, you know, the religion, and had lots of kids because of the, so everything in my life was because of the religion. But eventually, you know, things changed and I went the opposite direction. Things happened in my life. What happened to you in your life that made you want to leave it behind, or what made you question what was it, you know, what sparked that?
Well, I guess I'll go into what my childhood was like a little bit.
Yep.
So Jehovah's Witnesses aren't ones to celebrate birthdays. They aren't ones to celebrate holidays. So I didn't have those experiences. In school, you're not supposed to make friends, really. They're schoolmates, but they're not supposed to be your friends.
Because they're not in the same religion?
Correct. Yeah. You're supposed to stick with people who are like-minded. And, you know, depending on where you fall in the, you know, as far as your age in the congregation, you might not have anybody in your grade or school to have a friend. So you're basically alone in that respect.
Oh, wow.
And that can be challenging because, I mean, you know, friends are important for kids. You know, it's part of a development and, you know, you need that for later in life. But, so I remember instances if there was, say, a birthday party or some sort of a, you know, a Christmas concert or something like that, you end up getting sent out into the hall just to not be around it.
A Christmas concert?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anything. Why? That's because, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate holidays, Christmas or anything like that. So it's considered false religion. It's, oh. You know, they talk about having pagan origins.
It sounds like Islam now. Yeah. You don't celebrate Christmas. It's kufar. It's a non-Muslim holiday. But you don't, you say non-official Christian doctrine or something, right?
Yeah. Tradition. So, you know, because a lot of things have been picked from other traditions and cultures, and they just sort of get amalgamated into things.
Yeah.
These days, you know.
Yeah. I mean, since the beginning of time, I mean, that's a human thing of taking like things and making it your own. This is like from the birth of. I mean, just all the religions do that. I mean, even the flood myth of Noah came from like older stories, right? Like. So that's a human thing to do. But I understand this like Puritanism, because I was in a sect that was like that as well, known as Salafis or Wahhabis. Mm-hmm. And we don't, like, most Muslims celebrate birthdays. Like a lot of Muslims even celebrate the birthday of Prophet Muhammad. But I was in a sect that was like, no birthdays, no, you know, anniversaries. No, basically
not even nothing. Anniversaries.
Huh? No, not even wedding anniversaries. I mean, nowadays, I think a lot of Muslims, even the Salafi Muslims, the ones that are in the sect, which are mainly Saudi Arabia inspired Islam, they will actually now celebrate anniversaries and stuff. But like when I was growing up, no photography, no music, no anniversaries, no birthday parties, no birthday celebrations. It was really strict. Yeah. And all of this was considered like...
I'm trying to keep this sunlight out of my face.
Yeah, no worries, yeah. Yeah, so I do kind of resonate with what you're saying, that, you know, you were also a Christian, but a different type of Christian that wasn't allowed to do any of this fun stuff, which sucked, basically, right?
Yeah, it's a different flavor. Bland. So there's that, you know, and kids were encouraged to talk to other children in their class. They say it's like your own private territory as far as like the preaching work is concerned. And they'll show examples in their films of people doing that. And it just doesn't seem natural. From what I've seen generally, you know, kids are a little apprehensive to talk about that. But kids will make fun of you or be like, what are you talking about? You know, like, get this garbage out of my face. You know, so it's not something you really necessarily want to talk about. But that's what they want you to do. Yeah. And it's all brainwashing. They start very young. I would say, well, easily you could say that their numbers, when they increase, it's because new generations of children are baptized. As far as actual people that you meet door to door or on a, you know, a park bench or something, probably not all that much.
Interesting. I want to just leave this comment. I hated field service. So embarrassing as a kid when a classmate opened the door.
Oh yeah,
it's like the worst.
It's like, oh no, especially if it's somebody that doesn't like you, you'd be like, "See you at school. You're gonna get it."
Yeah, because you were a minority too, being part of this religion, right? Because most people are not Jehovah's Witness. So, how many kids in the class were Jehovah's Witness in your class? A couple, maybe.
As far as like in class in the same classroom,
yeah,
not even once. I had anybody in my classroom that was a witness.
You were like complete minority.
Yeah.
Now,
with that said, I was never a super zealous Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
So I still had people that I talked to and I had, you know, as acquaintances and friends, nobody that I would say was like a best friend situation, but you know, I didn't continue as a loner, just, you know, sitting in the corner going, reading my Bible. But that's something that would have been discouraged had, say, an elder seen that, me talking to someone, they might have had something to say about it.
Mm. There's a super chat here that I want to read. I just want to say thank you for the super chat. Stop scamming, man. He said, there's a movie on YouTube at the moment called Life for Ruth, made in 1962. It does a masterful job of exploring the implications of the belief blood transfusions are forbidden, even to save lives. That's Mormon, though, right? Mormons don't take blood transfusions.
It is Jehovah's Witnesses that do that.
Oh, it's Jehovah's Witnesses that do that. Yes. Oh, I thought it was Mormons. I made a mistake. Oh, so okay.
To my knowledge, they can. There's no problem with that. But Jehovah's Witnesses, definitely, it's forbidden.
Okay. So you were saying, and thank you again for Super Chat. So you were saying, just to continue with your story, it's tough being the one that can't do any of that stuff. But of course, like you said, kids are usually not like religious, right? It's basically
not
what
generally,
the parents want them to do or make them do. Just feel free to continue.
Yeah, as far as like kids are concerned, these days they're really trying to work on the kids. There's these videos. It's I think it's Caleb and Sophia. That's something that's come out in the last few years. So these cartoons that are supposed to, you know, have lessons for kids. And for instance, there's one to where the kid is imagining, you know, buying ice cream, and then rather than buy ice cream, they're like, maybe I should donate this to the work. It's like, that's not something a kid should have to worry about, making donations to the church. Come on. Let the kid have their ice cream, you know? Let the people with more money take care of that stuff. But, you know.
Yeah. And that's sad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. Yeah. It used to be that everything was done not on a voluntary basis. It was like the literature was a cost. So I remember when I was little, I don't remember what it was. It might have been like, you know, we asked for a donation, a 10-cent donation to cover the cost of printing and whatever else for this Awake magazine or something. You know, so it used to be here, purchase this literature. Then they decided, well, that doesn't seem good. So let's just make it on a voluntary basis. People can donate and contribute. But I feel like they get more for that because they guilt you. You know, it was always a big thing of like, oh, we don't ask for handouts. You know, we don't do that. That's the churches that do that, put out collection plate. But they will definitely throw out little bits of, yeah, we need to support the work and support Jehovah's organization. Yep. So maybe donate. Yeah, that's kind of how it feels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's talking about the children. But I kind of lost my train of thought on that. So
I'm going to read a comment. It says, those cartoons are disgusting, especially the ones that teaches Jehovah's Witnesses kids to be bigots.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what he or she is referring to, S. Ben?
Okay, so I think I have not seen them all, but I know there's one to where the girl, so Sophia, is showing a drawing to her mother, and she shows, she talks about there being a classmate that has two mothers.
Oh,
so
they actually have one. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so basically she's saying like the teacher says it just matters who you love and, you know, it doesn't matter anything else, which is correct. But the mother is correcting her saying, well, you know, it's important what Jehovah feels and he doesn't like it. So therefore we shouldn't like it either. Mm. So yeah, it's totally teaching kids to be bigots.
I see.
To be homophobic and so on. So it's wrong.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So going past your childhood, if there's nothing else to talk about there, do you want to tell us about what happened? Like, what changed in your life that you decided to, or how did you leave the religion?
Okay, so I guess you could say there's different ways to leave. Some people just come to the decision that it's not for them. They have questions that, you know, they can't satisfy, so they feel like they have to leave. Some people are disfellowshipped, which was the case of myself, which is something happened and they expel you. Mm-hmm. You know, you might still be, which was the case of me, as I wanted to go back. But, you know, I didn't feel like I could really measure up to the expectations. So after a while, after about a year, a little more than that, I just sort of decided, well, this isn't for me. You know, and I kind of left it. So I just decided to remove myself from the equation and just live my life. Not that I disagreed with things. It's just like, I'm just going to exit from it. I'm not going to try to go back. I'm just going to leave it at that. So it wasn't until years, you know, whether I was put out or decided to leave on my own, the result's really the same, that it's not something that is healthy for people. It causes damage, harm, trauma. So that's basically what happened there.
Is that what you call being excommunicated, or is that shunned? What's the terminology for that?
The term is disfellowshipped.
Disfellowship. And what other type of reasons why people would be disfellowshipped?
Oh, there's a large list.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can think of some of the basics, which would be like fornication, adultery, drug use. What else? Actually, lying can get you in trouble. You can be put out for lying, telling lies, which you shouldn't lie, but it doesn't seem like it's one of those things that you should have your life ruined over.
Lose your citizenship to the community.
Yeah. You could also be shunned for gambling. So if they say, for instance, you bought a bunch of scratch tickets, it's possible if you caught the elder in the wrong mood, they could kick you out for that. If you didn't express, you know, remorse, like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. If you went in with the attitude of, well, it's my money and I can do it and it's not really harming anything, they would probably put you out for that.
How would they know, though? Would they find out? Would someone tell rat on you, or like?
Oh, they yeah. It's a big thing to be ratted on by witnesses. they want you basically to keep an eye out for other people and what they're up to. So it's really, say for instance, let me get a for instance. So let's say you're out and about in town and you see somebody go into an X-rated club or something, right? Uh-huh. Okay. So that would get you in trouble.
Yeah.
When you saw them and they saw you, and so they, you know, you would have the responsibility to say, hey brother, like, I saw what you did there. That's wrong. You need to talk to the elders.
Yeah.
And you would have to basically say, like, I'll give you X amount of time, a week or something, to talk to the elders. If you don't, I'm going to have to do it for you. So they basically force your hand to turn yourself in.
There's like a deadline. Like,
right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, one week, buddy. 7 days, but, you know, like a certain amount of time, you'd be expected to say something. So, So it's, you can't get away with much, it feels like.
Oh man, it's a closed community, I guess, in many ways, eh?
Yeah, because, you know, you don't have anybody else to hang out with, so.
You're not allowed to make
friends. You're involved in each other's lives, it feels like.
Yeah, you're not allowed to make friends at school, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm going to read a couple comments that are related to this.
Okay.
My father, Jeremy, says my father was excommunicated from Jehovah's Witnesses because he was drafted to Vietnam War. That's interesting, because drafted is, I think it was mandatory. Yeah, it was mandatory.
Yes.
It's kind of, I guess you're expected to go to jail as a Jehovah's Witnesses are probably a...
they consider a conscientious objection.
Yeah, you're not supposed to like fight or whatever. Right? GS says you can be disfellowshipped for being an abuse survivor with PTSD. It's interesting. D is asking, are there incentives for telling on someone?
Other than you don't share in their blood guilt. So it's basically if you don't tell on them, it's like you're guilty of it by association because you were a party to it. Mm. You were aware of it. So if it came out and that found out that, you know, you knew about it and you didn't say anything, you could technically get in trouble too, as far as I understand.
Oh, wow. Stop Scamming Man said these trials with witnesses are judged on whether or not to be shunned are being increasingly filmed.
Are you talking about like secret films and stuff like that?
I guess he's talking about that. I'm not sure. It's interesting.
I think that there's been a lot more of, say, a YouTuber posting like, you know, here is my judicial committee that they on the sly, you know, taped it on their phone or something so they can play it for people to understand what it's all about. So that might be what's being referred to there.
When you said you couldn't meet the expectations to stay in the group, what sort of expectations were you referring to? Just like religiosity and stuff, and
you are basically told that you're good for nothing. Like there's, they refer to you as being a good for nothing slave. So
wow.
It's very common for Jehovah's Witnesses to feel like they're just not doing enough. There was a part in one of their films recently, maybe in the last couple of years, I saw it. I think Lloyd Evans covered it, where it's just, well, you're doing this and you're doing this, but could you do more? You know, you don't feel like you're ever going to measure up. I mean, you could be doing the most that anybody could possibly do, and it's always going to be like, but are you giving your all? So I didn't feel like I could measure up as far as like being prepared for the meetings or doing a good job in the field service or giving a good talk or just, you know, controlling thoughts and not cursing when I shouldn't or, you know, whatever the case might be. I just didn't feel like I could really pull it off. I remember in my past thinking at some point in my life, I think I'm going to be disfellowshipped. I don't know why, but I feel like I'm going to get kicked out because I'm just not going to be good enough.
Because you're a and human being.
Yeah. It just plays with your sense of, you just doubt yourself and you just feel like you're not ever going to measure up to the expectation that they have for you. And that really messes you up sometimes because you just feel like you're kind of like, well, I'm worthless. I can't do with, yeah, you shouldn't compare yourself to another person in the congregation, mind you, because, you know, you're different people, but you do, right?
Yeah.
You know, you probably see this guy and you're like, oh man, he's doing good. He's such a good speaker and he's obviously devout and you could tell he's just straight cut and, you know, he's doing the right thing and I'm not. I'd rather play violent video games than watch R-rated movies.
That's funny. I remember even as a Muslim that the same type of thinking that, you know, you're never good enough. You need to do more. You need to be more religious. No matter how religious you are, you're never religious enough. You're actually taught that the best people, the most religious people, thought of themselves as the worst people. So, like, you're given examples of people that, like Abu Bakr, who was the first caliph of Islam, and Omar, and these people, you know, they thought they were hypocrites. They thought, like, I'm a fake Muslim, even though they're like the pinnacle of like what it is to be Muslim based on how they follow the Prophet. They're considered the best examples, but they consider themselves the worst example. So you're taught that you're supposed to think like this. You're supposed to be always questioning yourself, am I really a good Muslim or am I actually just a fake Muslim, right? And you there's this constant, like, I'd say anxiety that what if I'm not good enough for God? What if I'm not good enough? And in terms of Islam, you're actually terrified by being taught that the day of judgment is 10,000 years long and there's going to be no water except for it and there's going to be no shade and you're going to be sweating. And you're like, as a Muslim kid or even as a Muslim adult, you're like visualizing this in your mind. You're thinking, every time you do something in your life that's wrong, you think, oh shit, I'm going to have to answer for that. And when I say wrong, I mean un-Islamic, not necessarily like,
right.
You're not even hurting anyone. Okay, I've missed a prayer. I slept in and I didn't pray the dawn prayer at 5 o'clock in the morning. There's a prayer you have to wake up for in the middle of the night. It's at dawn time. So no matter what, like, everyone's sleeping at that time, no one wakes up. I mean, some people wake up at dawn, but most people don't. So you'd have to wake up out of your bed, wash your face and body and arms, and then you have to pray. And then usually you go back to bed and it's hard to go back to sleep. So a lot of people miss a prayer. So that's like, you know, a sin, missing the prayer. And you're like, oh crap, well now what, I missed a prayer. You feel guilty. Or maybe you're looking at some, you know, pretty lady you're not supposed to be looking at, like you said. You know, watching movies, listening to music, so many things. I mean, it's like you're just being like a normal person and you're like, you've committed like a million sins and now you're on like God's bad side, right? So it's this constant, you know, maybe this is like a cult thing. In order to keep you trapped, it's like you're always worried about, you know, am I good enough? And so you keep trying harder and harder and harder and you never get out of it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's a big problem with this sense of doom that the end is coming soon. And are you going to be measuring up? Because they believe that non-Jehovah's Witnesses are going to be destroyed at Armageddon. But are you a good enough Jehovah's Witness that you're going to make it too? Because maybe you were slacking off. You know, so you're like always like, am I going to be okay when the end comes? Am I need to look out for, you know, fireballs hitting me too? That sort of thing. And I remember as a kid, one time there was a severe thunderstorm and it was so intense. It was a lot of flashing lights. It was like it was about to be night, and there was the storm drains flooded and everything. And I was panicked. I was like, is this it? Like, you know, and I was probably like maybe 11 or 12 or something, just thinking like, I wonder if this is the end. And that's not a healthy thing for a kid to deal with, or well, even a adult to worry about, you know, am I going to make it?
Yeah. A lot of people in the chat are relating to what you're saying. Mashable says rapture anxiety is real. I guess that's what's called, a rapture. And as a child, I used to be so scared that the sky would explode any minute. This is a thing for Muslims too. Right? Like a lot of Muslims are taught, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like when I think about it now, I'm like almost laughing. It sounds so stupid. It's like the day of judgment is coming any day now. But it's like, you wake up, you go to work, you go home, you wake up the next day. It's like, yeah, day of judgment is coming. And you actually think it's coming any day now. But like every day, it's like coming soon, coming soon. And it never comes. But you still think it's coming soon. And logically, you're like, it could come soon. Like, I mean, just because it didn't come for the last, you know, for Islam, it hasn't come for 1400 years. For Christianity, 2000. For Judaism,
any minute now, right?
For Judaism, it's even longer, right? It's just like,
that reminds me of some video I saw to where you see one of those poles, like for security, like sticking out of the ground.
There's a truck
going towards it, and it just shows the truck going towards it, and it cuts to another scene of it. And it's just sort of, you're like, it just makes you anxious. Like, come on, go ahead and hit the pole already. But yeah, so you just have that sort of anxious feeling every day. If, you know, if that's the way you live, that's not healthy. We have enough problems in the world to deal with without that sort of anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all mind control, thought control, and to shape people to do things that they want you to do. Right.
Yeah.
There's another super chat by Stop Scamming Man. Thanks again. He says, the Church of Jehovah's Witnesses, the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society is capriciously run by about 10 people who claim to be specially chosen and part of a select 144,000 who will enter heaven proper.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the governing body. They're the faithful and discreet slaves. So they're supposed to be in charge of issuing the the spiritual food at the proper time, as it's called, and they really make all the decisions. So, you know, some of them do the writing. They have people that work under them to do some writing too, but they essentially make all the decisions and the doctrine and stuff. And so any sort of a harmful doctrine that there is, they're complicit with that. You know, like shunning is harmful to people, and splitting up families, and as far as like the blood issue.
Can you tell me about splitting up families? What do you mean by that?
Well, just as far as the disfellowshipping is concerned. So,
like, how does it split up families? What happens?
Well, okay. So if someone is shunned, they are supposed to be shunned with everyone in the congregation, by everyone in the congregation, but also by family members. So, it could be brother, sister, parent, child, whatever might
wife.
Be. Yeah, wife, yeah. You're not supposed to have anything to do with them. If they live in your home, it's a little bit different because you have to have dealings with the person. You can't just be like, you know, they're sitting in the corner and you're ignoring them. they basically would have nothing to do with you spiritually, and they would try and reduce the amount of communication you have with them. But if they're outside of your home, you're supposed to cut them off entirely. So I think it's a very hurtful thing, and they think it's a loving arrangement because it's supposed to be loving discipline from God so that they can basically, you know, you'll come to your senses. But really, it's just manipulation to say, you know, here's your family, you better come in line, come on back. But that's, you know, like with myself, I miss my mom. I haven't really had much of a communication with her in the last 9 years. We've maybe had 3 conversations and she sent 2 letters, I think. And,
because of religion.
Yeah. So, you know, I miss her and I wish I had a relationship with her, but I don't. She hasn't met her grandson, who is turning 5 in October. And it's a shame that that's happening. She is getting on in years. I mean, I think she'll be 71. I forgot what I was saying now.
That's so sad. That is awful that when religion actually causes this sort of distance between like family members. And I mean, religion is supposed to be something that helps people, that actually, you know, leads to human, I mean, that's the idea behind
it. In theory.
It's to lead to human thriving. I mean, if you listen to Jordan Peterson talk about it or whatever, I mean, that's Christianity for you. That's religion. It's to do all these good things. But in reality, sometimes, even with Islam, you have the same thing, by the way. Just to resonate a little bit with what you're saying, I mean, thankfully, my mom and dad were very, they're kind of agnostic in a sense, and they're believers, but they're like, yeah. So my mom's cool with me being an atheist, being an ex-Muslim, whatever. Mm-hmm. She has no problem with it whatsoever. But my brother is also a religious Salafi Muslim. Mm-hmm. And so we're no longer close. We don't, even my uncle, one of my favorite uncles was a religious uncle, and I never talked to him. Like, I don't talk to him at all. One of my uncles even died, and he was my other favorite uncle. And I barely talked to him since I left Islam because it's just awkward. It's like everybody knows you're like the black sheep that left the religion. And I mean, they're not shunning me. They'll talk to me if I say, hi, how's it going? Yeah, nice to talk to you. But it's like, it's weird. Like, it's all my friends. I lost all my friends, pretty much every single one of them. Some of them maybe still would talk to me again. It's weird because I don't know about your case, but in my case, a lot of us were friends because of the religion. Was it like that for you too? I mean, yeah. I guess
Yeah, definitely. Like, okay, so you're supposed to show love to your brothers and sisters, and you know, it's what's it called, agape love. So, you know, basically you go to the meetings and you see people and you're like, hey, how's it going? And you ask how they're doing. And, you know, you check on, you know, how's the job going and how have you been? How's your health? That's generally the extent of your conversation is, hey, what's up? How's the weather? You know, it's supposed to be a loving arrangement where, you know, anybody would help you because they're your brother and sister, but it's just sort of a facade. Because I don't understand. See, I'll never be able to understand this as long as I live. How you can go from, I love you and I care about you and you are my brother, to someone says, so-and-so is no longer one of Jehovah's Witnesses. And just like that, they shut it off. And suddenly they would ignore you. And I think if they saw you broke down on the side of the road, they would just move past you.
It's very conditional. Then,
oh, yeah. Because they're programmed to do that. They're saying that, you know, it's supposed to be loving, but it is, again, a manipulation. And so if you decided to come back, like you succumbed to that manipulation and you decided to go back and, you know, you showed that you're remorseful, because you would generally have to write a letter to the elder body to say, you know, I'm sorry for what I did. I shouldn't have done it. I won't do it again, et cetera, et cetera. They would make a decision whether they're going to reinstate you. So if they say, you know, okay, we see that you're remorseful, whatever, they would make an announcement at the meeting. So you'll be sitting there with everyone giving the, you know, basically ignoring you like you're a ghost. And then suddenly, oh, we love you again. Welcome back. It's just like, what are you, robots? You just sort of on and off switch on, like, on you giving a crap about whether I'm alive or not. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So, it's a very shallow type of love. It's very conditional.
It is.
Especially when it's family members, because we're programmed by nature to love like your mom, your brother, your sister, and your kids and all that. I mean, you're related. You share half of the same DNA. Like,
yeah,
my brother looks like me. Like, we both look like my dad and my mom, right? But like, well, half of us is the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yet somehow I hate this person now. Or I mean, maybe not hate in my case, but I'm saying there's cases like that where your family members don't want anything to do with you, and it's like, what happened? You just shut off the. I mean, yeah. there must be a lot of suppressed, like this. There must be a lot of. I don't want to say PTSD, but there's a lot of suppressed feelings. But you know, obviously, like a mother to her child. Usually, mothers love their children more than anything else.
Right.
Yet they're taught, "Oh, I can't love you anymore." So there must be a lot of like mixed feelings, and I don't
absolutely PTSD,
but do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a feeling of abandonment, for one thing. It's hurt, right?
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily, like, I don't hate my mother, obviously. I still love my mother. But have I been hurt by my mom because she took the stance of you know, shunning me as well? Of course. It hurts. And I don't know, if my mom tomorrow were to call me up saying, "I'm sorry, let's talk again," it wouldn't be the same. I don't think it could be the same.
You lost maybe, many years.
Yeah, you just lost something. But you know, it could be repaired eventually, but I know my mom she's very stubborn, and she's very like, she is devout in that way. She's originally from Panama. So she's a native Spanish speaker. So she is in a Spanish congregation, and I think she's a pioneer, and you know, that's her life.
Pioneer means it's like a senior position.
Pioneer would be a full-time minister.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So that they're like where I said that, you know, about 10 hours is the expectation for most people. Mm-hmm. Pioneers, it's 70 hours a month. It used to be 90 hours a month. And I think way, way back when it may
have a lot of work.
More. Oh yeah, for sure.
It's like a full-time job. Absolutely. I mean, almost.
Yeah. Because it's also preparation. That's just the time actually speaking to people doing things. There's preparation involved. So it is a full-time job.
So they're not joking when they say slaves.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, Islam says that too. Islam says Abdullah, it means servant of Allah or slave of Allah. Abd means slave, right? Okay. Like you're a slave. Like my name literally means slave of God.
Okay.
That's what Muslims are. That's supposed to be the ideal for Muslims, to be a slave of God. But it looks like that terminology is used by your former church as well.
Yeah, I think Jonathan is actually, in whatever language would transfer or translate to gift from God, but I don't remember. It's been a long time since I heard it.
But do you think like your mom is also having some like I know like when someone religious that's close to me behaves in a manner that's not the like actual feelings, but the behaving because of the religion, I know that deep down inside they're like there's mixed feelings and there's some sort of like, you know, am I doing the right thing? And, you know, I wish I didn't have to behave this way with this person, but it's for their own good. Do you know what I mean? Like, you still kind of, I sometimes wonder if these religious people that are doing these things, they actually feel bad about it, but they can't help themselves because they're like too brainwashed, you know?
It's true. I think given the choice, my mom would love to talk to me. And I know that she said basically in her letter that, like, you know, I love you and I think about you all the time, and and you know, Jehovah and I are waiting for you to come back with open arms and stuff, you know, like the prodigal son. So she wants to make it known that she does care about me and she does think about me and that sort of thing too, but she still is going that way because that's what they're taught and they're conditioned to do it. And you know, when I was, you know, like in my teens or early 20s, I was the same way. If I saw somebody disfellowshipped, I didn't have anything to do with them. Although it never really sat right with me. Mm. So I would be looking at them and thinking not like, oh, that person has done something wrong. I would be like, I'm sorry that you're going through this. I hope that you're back soon so that we can associate with you. So it was a different sort of mentality for me, whereas I didn't like, you know, if I saw somebody in the grocery store, I wouldn't be like, oh, you know, talk to that person. I would kind of like, I wonder if they're okay.
Yeah.
you know, and actually I had a friend who was disfellowshipped in the same congregation I was in. And I couldn't really talk to him. So I just sort of discreetly left a note at his door saying, and it wasn't addressed from me. It was just basically, you know, like, people are thinking about you. We hope you're okay. And we hope to see you back soon. So, you know, I've never agreed fully with the shunning process. It's just, to me, it's not loving. You can say all day long that, oh yeah, it's loving, it's discipline, it's God's way of ushering you back. Now that's baloney. It is manipulation. It is the carrot and the stick. They're holding your family hostage so that you will fall in line and come back to do what they want you to do. It's power. That's what it is.
And it's not your family's choice what's right and wrong and whether you're allowed to do that. It's all what the church says, right?
Yeah. Like, as far as the teachings of the Jehovah's Witnesses are concerned, I don't think everything, 100% of what they say is wrong or bad necessarily, yeah, because it's Bible teachings. And, you know, there are a lot of good things in the Bible. Treat your neighbor well and, you know, show, you know, they're all good things that are in the Bible, right?
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that. And I think people have the right to believe whatever they want if it isn't harmful to others or themselves.
Yes.
So, you know, in a perfect world, if I could be like, well, here's the doctrines that you should change. I mean, okay, let's say somebody's done something, that's harmful and, you know, they've done some bad things. I can understand the concept of keeping the congregation clean, but when it comes to the shunning, it should be, here's what's happened. And do you want to be around that? Yes or no? That's up to you. So it should be the choice of people to decide to stay away from you or not, especially your own flesh and blood. That should be their personal choice to associate with you or not. It should not be something that's forced upon them.
Mm. You know, it's interesting because in Islam, I don't know about mainstream Christianity, but in Islam, there's no such thing like this of shunning. I mean, you still keep in touch with your family members, but you're always calling them back to Allah. You want them to join, like, but you don't cut them off like that, which is, it's interesting that this particular religion uses this, like, this technique. Although other Muslims, especially Salafi Muslims, do use this. They call it boycotting. Especially it was more common back in Muslim countries where, if someone was deviant, they had the wrong belief, so doing something usually is about beliefs, like you have some misguided belief or something, or you're talking to the wrong people, you're talking to people of bid'ah, meaning like the misguided bad Muslims, then they would boycott you in order to try to make you come back. So again, it's like a bullying sort of technique, but it's not as common. What you said about believe what you want, that's so true. Like, we should allow people to believe what they want and to practice the religion the way they want to. What's more right. important is whether people are given the right to whether to choose to believe or disbelieve, right. whether people have the freedom to, for example, the hijab. Like, I don't like the hijab. So nope. I should have the right to say the hijab is a terrible thing. I don't like it. It's bad for women. It's oppressive. At the same time, if someone wants to wear it, that's her right to wear it. And I will defend Absolutely. Her right to wear it. And, you know, I've even made videos on, like, you know, some women that were like kind of, you know, there was a young soccer player. She was like 16 and she was kicked off the soccer team because she was wearing hijab. And I'm like, why? How does a hijab have, what does it have to do with her playing soccer? It's not even like a safety thing. It's just like, it just seemed like a dumb, stupid rule that was bigoted to me. It was like singling out.
It feels like a lot as Islamophobia for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So that the term Islamophobia is a little bit problematic. It's a very politically loaded term because what it does and what it does is it conflates criticism of Islam, the beliefs, with being a bigot. Bigotry towards Muslims. So definitely anti-Muslim bigotry is a very bad thing, and it's something that I'm against and I fight against as well. All my family's Muslim, and even if they weren't, you know, I'm about human rights because I'm a humanist, and I care that everyone should have, you know, freedom and belief and should not be disrespected based on the gender, based on the sexuality, based on the religion, the race, anything, right? That's who I am. That's what I believe in. But the term Islamophobia, unfortunately, it was, I think if I remember reading correctly, it was created by the Muslim Brotherhood. It's a very tactical term, Islamophobia. It says, it literally means you're scared. You have an irrational fear of Islam. But Islam it's an ideology, it's an idea, and it can mm-hmm. be criticized, and it should be criticized just like any other ideology out there. If we protect, the problem is people, Muslims sometimes use Islamophobia as a slur to stop people like me from criticizing the harmful parts of the religion. Like if I say hijab is bad, oh, you Islamophobe, how dare you say that? And I'm like, well, it's just my personal opinion. Some Muslims don't like it. Are they Islamophobes too? Like, you know what I mean? Like yeah. a Muslim woman that like says, okay, Muslim women should have the right to choose what they wear. Is she an Islamophobe? Of course not. She's not an Islamophobe. So the term, the real meaning of it, anti-Muslim bigotry, for sure, that's a valid concern. And yeah. we should respect. But in terms of like the term itself is a bad term. It's
kind of loaded, huh?
It's a loaded term, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah.
I'll have to remember that next time I'm referring to it.
But what you said is like right on the point that, you know, it doesn't matter what people in a way, it does matter what people believe. But they should. We don't want to turn into like a fascist state like China,
right?
That forces you, you know, like thought police that you can only believe this or you can't believe. We don't want to turn into the secular Taliban.
Right. That actually makes me think of some of the things I wanted to talk about.
That's oh yeah. Oh yeah. Go ahead.
As far as like thought control, So, I got onto TikTok. I don't know, maybe 2.5-3 months ago. Mm-hmm. I noticed that there was a lot of similarities in other religions, and other ex-members are just like, wow, we have similar stories. And one thing that I saw was the BITE model. So that is behavioral control, information control, thought control, and emotion control. And if you look at some of the religions such as Scientology, Jehovah's Witnesses, LDS Church, there's a lot of that you can tick the box of saying, yep, it definitely does that too. So there's a lot of thought control. They're trying to control how your thinking is. They want you to put on the, what happened there? Oh, okay. I'm like, why did I shrink on the screen? Forget what I was saying now.
Yeah, but behavior control, information control, thought control, emotional control, these are the signs of a cult.
Absolutely. And
other religions you were saying had similar that you saw on TikTok.
Yeah, so I could see that. There's a lot of good stuff on TikTok. I think it's an excellent platform, and I'm really glad I got involved in it. I wasn't super vocal about these things up until recently, within the last couple of years. And this is really where I found my voice. So I had a traumatic experience unrelated to religion that happened in January. So my job is I have a cleaning business, and I was at a pharmacy cleaning. I was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. And there were three men that came into the pharmacy, and they held up the place at gunpoint. And I happened to be right at the counter where you open the door and they come into the back part. I was wiping down things. So the guy was pointing a gun at me, asking where the narcotics were, and then asking for my phone, pointing a gun at me. So I was basically in a panic. And for a little while, I was afraid to, I would get anxiety just going into Walmart or seeing certain people. And it was a trauma. So I was able to get some counseling through the police services. And in doing that, I didn't realize it, but one trauma can basically make a bunch of other traumas come out. And lo and behold, all my religious stuff popped out.
Oh, wow.
So, I just was dealing with that with the shunning from my mom. It was a big thing for me. So I had changed my thought process from before, whereas I was like, I understand why mom is doing this. She's doing what she feels is right. She's trying to be a devout Christian, a Jehovah's Witness. But I don't like it, but I understand it. And then it became of, wait a minute, there's so much wrong with this organization. Why am I sitting here going, that's okay? It's not okay. So I just felt like I can't sit there and, be quiet anymore. So that's why I decided to become more vocal about these sort of things. And, I was like, I've heard about this TikTok thing. So I got on there and suddenly I realized, oh my goodness, there's a whole bunch of apostates on there and of different, you know, formerly of different faiths. And like, I can relate to this Mormon. I can relate to this person here, even though it wasn't the same religion, because we all have these similar traumas that come from, you know, religious oppression and thought control and behavior control and all that stuff. So yeah. I needed to get that in here. I don't know how much time we have left, so I wanted to make sure that I threw in that bit there.
Yeah, absolutely. That is so, so true. And as well, you're studying a YouTube channel, right? You're thinking of YouTubing?
Yeah, right now I just have a channel and it's just sort of a placeholder until I have more time for content. I'm pretty busy with a large family and with the business, my wife commented today. So it's like, yeah, I see a lot of you, you're in a bathroom when you're doing your stuff. I'm like, well, it's because I just thought of something while I was cleaning. Yeah. And I just took 5 minutes to film the thing and then edit it later.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the nice thing about TikTok is you get that opportunity
so quick.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You have a chance just to do it. Like, you know, unfortunately I got permanently banned from TikTok. Looks like we lost Jonathan. Give me a second. I'll just send him an email. While I'm waiting for him to come back, yeah, I got permanently banned on TikTok. that platform is not good. It's too easy to be mass flagged. He's back.
Oh, there you go. I'm not sure what happened there.
No worries. I was just saying, yeah, I got unfortunately banned on TikTok. That platform is too easily. Ex-Muslims have a really tough time on TikTok. I know Infidel Noodle got her account banned a couple times, but now she's okay. Her account seems to be stable. Apostate Aladdin, my good friend Aladdin, he's got permanently banned on one of his accounts. He created another account. I had over 5,000 followers on TikTok. I was getting way too popular, and certain people just didn't like that. And unfortunately, the platform is too easy to manipulate but yeah, if you're doing well, I mean, by all means, keep going. I mean, that is amazing. I that's how I found you, right? So I still do use it from time to time. I want to ask you a couple of things before we finish. Sure. This was something I was going to ask, and then James also mentioned the exact same question. In what way are people vulnerable? Okay, actually, my question was a little bit different, but I'll ask his first. In what ways are people vulnerable after leaving tight-knit controlling religious communities? Do followers of other ideologies try to take advantage? So my question was related to this, which was, and we can basically answer both of them together.
Okay.
What I've noticed about Jehovah's Witnesses and every religion is they prey on vulnerable people.
Oh, yes.
And he's asking here about like other religions doing that, because now you've been shunned. Now you're kind of vulnerable. You're looking for, you know, someone. You don't have a place to belong to anymore. And now his question is, do they jump in? Does someone else jump in and try to, like, the Muslim guy be like, hey, you should become Muslim. We don't do that. But like, don't the Jehovah's Witnesses do that too? They go to people that are depressed or sad or just broke up and be like, Jesus's kingdom welcomes people like you.
Yeah, they're very quick to jump on something that is a tragedy in your life. So for instance, I mean, they're gonna come to your door and they're gonna have a basic presentation because they don't know where to start, right? Yeah. But they'll ask questions to find out where you are in your life, what's going on with you. So say, you know, they're able to get out of that your mom died or something 2 years ago and you're still dealing with that, or you lost a child, or you just lost your job, or you're about to be homeless because you're poor. They'll find whatever it is, and like maybe you have an illness. And they'll be like, well, you know, in the future, you have an opportunity to live in paradise where you're no longer going to be sick, or, you know, where you can welcome your loved one back, and where, you know, you can live in prosperity and serving God and stuff. So they'll find a way, they'll find that thing that you're going to be like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then they'll kind of reel you in. So that, yeah, they're very much manipulative. As far as, leaving Jehovah's Witnesses and then be susceptible to a different religion, I don't know. That's not my personal experience, so I can't say for everyone, obviously.
Yeah.
I think you might be, if you feel like you've lost something that you want to replace with something else. I could see where you're like, well, this religion is different, but I feel the sense of community. I can make new friends, whatever. You might do that. But on the other side of the coin, you might be like, well, I've been burned once. If I want to get involved in another group and get burned again. So that's kind of where I stand as like my belief system is sort of in flux. I'm trying to figure out what I believe. And I think that's probably going to be the way I am for the rest of my life. I don't know. Like some things are like a big question mark. Some things are like, yeah, that makes sense to me. Other things I'm like, well, that's garbage. For instance, the hell doctrine, I cannot come to terms with the fact that there can be a loving God, yet people who are tormented for all of time. That does not fit. Those two things just don't go together. So I don't think that, you know, hell is a thing. I was always taught as Jehovah's Witness that basically you die and that's it. You know, you go to the grave and that's it. There is no suffering. The everlasting destruction or hell could be like just, what's the word I'm looking for? Non-existent. You just don't exist anymore. So,
yeah,
I hope that somewhat answered that question.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely don't believe in hell either. I was going to say, you probably don't have a lot of Muslims in the area that you live anyways, do you? James is asking from UK, where there's a lot of Muslims, so it's a totally different setup there. Another super chat, thank you, James. And Ram Rana wants to ask, are Jehovah's Witnesses losing members between changing the 1914 doctrine? I have no idea what he's talking about. The internet making info available and lockdowns closing kingdom halls is shrinking. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that. So for the last 40 years or something, there has been an increase, not a huge increase, like maybe, you know, 1.8% or something like that. This is the first year, 2020 was the first year that they reported negative numbers.
Oh, wow.
So they're seeing a decline. Probably COVID would have something to do with that because they're not able to go out like they had been before. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how the baptism process is taken care of right now because you don't have any physical conventions. It's all online. So like, I don't know, are they like in somebody's pool at one of the elders' houses? I don't know how they're handling that one.
Yeah.
As far as doctrine is concerned, you know, there's been a lot of changes over time. And like, for instance, the generations. So 1914 is supposed to be when, as I remember it, like I'm not a scholar. Like sometimes I forget things. So if I give you wrong information, I apologize. It's just my recollection. But 1914 would be when Jesus basically took over in heaven and appointed, I think it's like appointed basically it's something invisible in heaven. Let's put it that way. It's been a while. I feel like I need to crack open a book or something.
In 1914, Jesus took the new job. He took a new job position in heaven.
Yeah, kind of. It used to be years ago that 1914 was going to be the start of the end, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't happen. So then it became like, well, it happened in heaven. And no one got to see it. How conveniently it's invisible. And, you know, we as humans don't get to see that. But we just know it's happening.
I love that.
And it's supposed to be...
Yeah. Moving the goalposts.
they are very good at moving the goalposts. I made a cartoon thing basically of one of the governing body members with his head in a jar because it's supposed to be like him in the future because the goalpost has been moved so much that now he's just like one of those Futurama heads and he's like, stay alive to 2075. Because 1975 was a big thing. There was a lot of people that left at that time because they were saying they did some creative math work and saying that the end is probably coming in 1975. So at that time,
I love these end of the world predictions. It's like every couple of years there's a new one.
Yeah, well, like the guys with the sandwich boards just sitting having coffee. Did it come? No. Okay, what do you want to do? Let's change the date on the board.
There's a documentary. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so the 75 was supposed to be, there was actually a talk in a convention where there's a quote saying, stay alive to 75. So they're saying it's coming, it's going to be here in like in a year and a half, or now it's going to be a year, it could be 6 months. Didn't happen. Well, in that time, people were thinking, well, the end's coming. I got to really, you know, go hardcore at being a good witness. So they sold their stuff. They sold their homes. They sold their businesses so that they could donate money and so that they could do full-time ministry. And then the end did not come and they were left with nothing. So there's a lot of people. Yeah, there was a big exodus of people from the organization because of that, because they were like, well, this is baloney and we believed you guys.
So the Jehovah's Witness organization was giving these dates to people, end of the world dates?
Yeah, it's in their literature. They try and say that it was just like people misinterpreting things. But I mean, when it's coming from them and in talks given in conventions, like that's not coming from someone else. It's coming from you, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, governing body. You know, you can try and they try and bury that stuff now. You'll find there's literature that you used to be able to get that has been out of circulation.
Yeah.
That they want you now to avoid, because if you compare what it says then with what it says now, you're like, well, this is totally different. Like, how can you have such a drastic change in your thinking? And so anyway, going back to the whole 1914 thing, with the generations, it was supposed to be that do you know who the anointed are? Have you ever heard of that? Okay. So that 144,000 they were talking about. So those are supposed to be spirit anointed kings and priests in heaven that are going to basically rule in heaven over the earth. Mm-hmm. That's the way I understand it. So that generation was not supposed to pass away. Well, 1914 is a long time ago. They're pretty much, they're all dead, right? So that didn't work. So they had to basically say, well, we had new light. There's a new understanding of this. So now it's basically anybody that was alive at the time that somebody who was anointed by 1914 was still alive. So, you know, it would have went, this guy's like 90.
It's getting convoluted, isn't it?
It's terrible. I made a TikTok yesterday and the day before, basically with one of those like conspiracy boards with the red strings across. Like, if you'll just look at this board, at this simple chart here, it'll make sense. It doesn't make sense. So what they've done is they've buffered in another 30 years or so to say that, yeah, it's still, you know, it's the contemporaries of that generation, and it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you look at a generation is generally about 20 years? Mm-hmm. Like Generation X, the baby boomers and so on. It's about 20 years. It's not 70, 90 years. That's not a generation. That's several generations. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Talking about your TikTok, let me just, I want to share that with everyone. So those of you who are TikTok users, do check out his channel. It's really nice, and follow him on there. And there's a link. I posted the link in the chat as well. I'm going to read a couple more super chats as well.
Okay.
And I think we can then try to finish up. So I heard from multiple people that when some Jehovah's Witnesses are out preaching, they muse on luxury homes that they want to move in after Armageddon.
Oh, yes. I have heard that too. Yeah. So they might see your house again. Like, especially if you're somebody, okay, let's say you've got a nice home. They knock on your door and you're just like, no. And you slam the door in their face. They're basically like, you're going to die. And I'm going to kick your corpse to the side and I'm going to move into your place. It's just morbid and ridiculous. I have heard that. I haven't personally experienced that with me because I don't have that sort of mentality. And I think if I had a partner at the door who was talking, I'd be like, what is wrong with you? It just seems wrong to me to be that way. But
So, I want to thank you for coming and for covering all of this stuff with us and for sharing your personal details. Thank you, Gay the Prayer Away, for the donation as well, the super chat. And to everyone that joined us. And before we go, do you want to tell us about where people can find you? So I shared your TikTok. Is that the main place you want people to go to, or do you prefer Instagram?
For now, the Instagram is of the same name. So it's X Witness Awake.
Oh, and you have some merch as well, right? Let me share that.
Yeah, it's. I'm still creating designs because, if we have just a little bit more time. So recently we created, maybe a couple months ago, Apostate Coalition is the hashtag that was created. So I had a conversation with a couple of TikTokers and we came across that And it just is basically people from different, you know, faiths all getting together. So it's just sort of an amalgamation of different. Yeah, that's the one I was talking about.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, because there's basically there's more strength in numbers, right? You know, you have ex-Muslims, you have ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, ex-Mormons, and so forth. But if we all work together as kind of a common, we're more of an army. And what I had been doing is making signs. I'm going to probably continue to do that. But unfortunately, with signs, it takes a little effort. You put them out, and then, you know, a day later, someone's pulled it out and throw it in the garbage or something. So yeah. I got to thinking, you know what? If I make T-shirts, things like that people could wear, they can't take that message away from you. It's on you. Yeah. You know, it's yours. You can't have that thrown away. So that's what I like to do. And it's just little things that make people think, basically.
Yeah, no, this is awesome.
That one, if you go further down, I did redo that design so that it has more context, because if you're not a Jehovah's Witness, that probably wouldn't make any sense to you whatsoever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, there's one that talks about if you're hiding predators, then you're just caring more about you care less about saving children than you about saving face. And that's true in any religion. If you know, they hide it. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They try and bury it. There's a big thing going on. There's been programs on TV and on the internet talking about the Australian Royal Commission. So that's a case. I think it was 2015 or 16. To where there was over 1,000 perpetrators of sexual assault and children's assault that were just basically, they had records of them and they just kept them in a file. And those people were not turned in to the authorities, which they should be.
Yeah, that sucks.
So,
yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know, man. There's a definite ethical breach of trust there. I mean, you know, these religious people are supposed to be taking care of the community, but there's a huge gap there between, you know, protecting the leaders and the, you know, people in power versus doing what needs to be done, you know, for the victims. And okay, this is going to be the last comment. Thank you for all the super chats, guys. But we're going to end it right after this. Oh, wait, before that one, it's awful the way Watchtower organization hides child abuse. This is what you were talking about.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
And sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just going to go to the next comment. Gave a homeowner a New World Bible, a Watchtower pamphlet, and a book called World Will End Very, Very Soon, 100th Anniversary Edition. I think he's joking.
That's pretty funny. But yeah, okay. It is a shame that they hide those things, and there's a lot of problems with it, and I would like to, if I could see changes in people's thinking, it should be, if you want to change your mind in any given religion, you should have the right to do that and not have your life being thrown under the bus.
Absolutely. So thank you again, Jonathan. Really appreciate you coming on. It was a pleasure speaking with you and hearing more about, you know, what you went through and some of the challenges, you know, how, you know, unfortunately your mom, you know, is very religious, and this is one of the things in this particular religion that they shun ex-members, and you know, it's a sad thing, and I hope that, you know, more people will start taking the religion less seriously. And you know, you're doing great work on your channel, on your TikTok as well. I mean,
thank you.
So
thank you.
I do recommend people check it out. Everything's linked in the comments. Yeah, you want to say something else?
Yeah, so I just want to say that I am in a great relationship. I think my wife is probably watching, so I don't want to go without mentioning her, and I have great kids. And I'm very happy in that respect.
So wonderful.
I appreciate her support. She wasn't a Jehovah's Witness, but she does support me in this. And I appreciate her very much.
That's awesome to hear. All right, and that's it. That's a wrap, guys. Once again, thank you guys for joining, guys and girls. I just mean guys in general, meaning everybody. And do subscribe to the channel if you're new here. I forgot to do this thing. I usually, in the middle of the show, I do this thing where I share my screen and on the air I go and I click on the thumbs up. So please go and thumbs up the channel, the stream. If you guys liked it, do this. YouTube will take this as a sign to share it with more people, because we want to get the word out, the good word. Jonathan is not atheist. We didn't talk about that much. He still believes in God, but the good word, meaning, you know, that freedom of religion, you know, freedom of choice. Everyone, you know, gets to believe what they want to believe. This is what we all, this is what we believe in, both of us, right? So this is why we were talking, and away from the harmful, you know, dangers of dogma and, you know, false religion and all that stuff. So this is what we stand for. And yeah, so that's it. It's been a wrap. Thank you, everyone. And for me, it's a good night. For everyone else, a good have a good day. And we'll see you on the next live stream, which should be in a few days as well. Take care. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.